Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to another edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-hosts today are Brian Johnson and Matt Harrison. Hello, guys.
Oh, my God. We're back again.
They can't break us up. Scott Fish trying to break us up. Can't happen.
Nope.
Maybe we'll get Scott next week. Lots to get to over the course of the show, including three tough questions. You can play along. Try to go 3-0. Premature speculation, where we give you three players that you will want to have next week, so you go get them this week. We'll have nine players upon whom you can take a chance. Players that are available in many leagues, players you don't normally start, but you can this week for a variety of reasons. And I have been dreadful with my take a chance on me players this year. I have vowed to do so much better this week, in part because at least in a couple of cases, I'm lowering the bar a little bit on what constitutes a take a chance on me player.
I've been picking up the slack. Just have that.
You have. You've been red hot.
Have that peacock ready.
I will. I don't know how you ready a peacock exactly. I don't think I want to know.
You get it out of the pen. You feed it some seed.
I think
let's just stop now.
Is the technical term?
Yeah, let's. I don't. You know, we're prepping the peacock. We will break down every NFL game fantasy style. We begin with San Francisco taking on New England. Brian, 2 weeks ago I was saying, go get Jimmy Garoppolo. He's coming back. And then he was so bad he got benched. And then I spent a week regretting the fact that I told people to get Jimmy Garoppolo. And then last week he goes out and throws three touchdowns in the first half, just proving you can't win.
Yeah, I was going to close with Garoppolo on the San Francisco side, but we'll start there. He's on the bench, sadly, in a revenge game. Bill Belichick is just not going to allow Jimmy Garoppolo to have a good game. The Niner I like best in this game is Jerick McKinnon. Even though I'm going to give him a C, and I might give George Kittle a B, we'll get to Kittle in a minute, but a C for McKinnon, averaging 19 touches for nearly 90 combo yards and a touchdown per game as the starting running back. The Patriots, not a great matchup, though. They've only allowed two total touchdowns to running backs so far this year, but they are allowing 128 combo yards to the position, so Jet is a pretty safe volume play, even though this Jamichael Hasty kid showed a little spunk the other week.
Yeah.
Last week. Looked good. Matt, get your head out of Devontae Freeman's range over there. Over to George Kittle. Can give him a B. Probably the worst matchup for Kittle out in the season. The Patriots are allowing the third fewest catches per game, 3. The sixth fewest yards per game, 40, to opposing tight ends. And Belichick, he's going to want to shut down Garoppolo, but you know how he loves to take away the team's best weapon, opposing team's best weapon. That is George Kittle.
For sure.
Just ask what he did to Travis Kelce. He only had 3 catches. Darren Waller, just 2 catches. So I'm a little worried about Kittle in this one, but you're definitely not benching him. You are benching Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, though. Stephon Gilmore will be a problem for both of these guys. And outside of the Seattle and Kansas City wide receivers who the Patriots faced, they've kept every other wideout out of the end zone unless they were a Seahawk or a Chief. And the 49ers wideouts are not for me, those teams. And that does it for the San Francisco side. Over to the New England side, James White, a C for him. 15 catches in 2 games since returning, but this isn't a great spot on paper for him either. San Francisco has only allowed 1 running back to top 3 catches. Miles Gaskin has had the best day through the air for running backs against San Francisco with 5 catches for 34 yards. So that's hopefully a floor for James White here. He should still see double-digit PPR points. Damian Harris, I have him on the bench. San Francisco has allowed just 2 rushing touchdowns to running backs, and just 1 opposing back has topped 65 rushing yards. And if there's a goal line rush for the Patriots, it's probably going to Cam Newton. We'll get to in a second. The only pass catcher we'll talk about for the Patriots is Julian Edelman. He gets a C. San Francisco has allowed a touchdown per game to opposing wide receivers. Julian Edelman is yet to score this year. But this is a plus matchup with backup slot corner Jamar Taylor, likely to see Edelman in coverage most. He's allowed 107 passer rating in his 3 games played as a starting slot corner, so a C for Edelman. And Kill Harry on the bench, we're not getting to that too much. And then Cam Newton, we just talked about. The 49ers have allowed 5 passing touchdowns over the last 2 weeks. That's a lot. But I'm not going to talk about Cam Newton's arm right now. It's all about legs.
There's nothing to talk about with his arm. Cam, I think he's averaging, I'm doing this off of my head, I think he's averaging 180 passing yards and half a touchdown per game.
Yeah, and but again,
that's brutal.
Those are just the bonus points for Cam at this point, right? Double-digit rushing attempts in 3 of 5 games for Cam. He's scored on the ground 5 times already. Mobile quarterbacks have had success against the Niners so far this season. Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz combined for 177 yards on 23 carries with 2 touchdowns.
So are we sure Daniel Cam. Jones is mobile?
He's too mobile. That's the problem.
You run just 80 yards at any speed, Matt, and I want to see
without falling down.
Yeah. He was going 22 miles per hour.
And he was cooking.
That's white guy record speed right there, as far as I'm
concerned. He was going faster than his legs would physically take
him. Yes, I think you're right. Somehow, despite using his legs. Matt, Pittsburgh takes on Tennessee. James Conner, against all odds, remains a workhorse back. When he got knocked out in week 1, everybody, me, you know, basically wrote off his potential to be a workhorse back this year, but he's proving us wrong at pretty much every game.
Yeah, and I'm giving him an A this week. He's scored in 4 straight, cleared 100 yards in 3 of his last 4, and the Titans are allowing 5 yards per carry and 112 yards per game to the running back position. It is worth noting, though, for those scoring at home, Benny Snell has exactly 7 carries in each of those last 2 games, and Anthony McFarland only has 3. So if you're waiting on the James Conner injury,
if you're waiting for the other shoe to drop,
Benny Snell is the guy to have right now. Ben Roethlisberger, I'm giving a B. Big Ben just hasn't been asked to air it out, averaging only 236 passing yards per game, which makes him 18th in that category. But he's averaging 2.2 passing touchdowns per game, so he's throwing the scores. That's good. Mm-hmm. That really works here because the Titans have allowed multiple touchdown passes to each of the last 4 quarterbacks they've faced. Basically, if your name isn't Drew Lock, you throw for multiple scores. Chase Claypool is the number 1 wide receiver on the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I won't hear it any other way.
Well, you don't know that yet because every time Deontay Johnson's been on the field with him, Deontay Johnson has been the number 1 receiver.
You know what? Yeah, maybe. Anyway,
we'll see. Well, I just
until
think
he got hurt in the first quarter. Trust me, my bankroll has suffered.
Deontay Johnson out there.
I'm going back to the well this week.
Claypool has 6 scores in his 5-game career and is facing off against the Titans defense that has allowed 11 different wide receivers to top 50 yards or score in a game this year, and they've only played 5 times. They're allowing 16 catches per game for almost 200 yards to the wide receiver position because we talked about Claypool. He's only got 24 targets on the season. That's not a lot.
No.
Juju leads the team with 28. Yikes. James Washington and Deontay Johnson each have 26. It's a wide receiver by committee. Now, Deontay has missed 2 games.
Exactly. On a per-game basis, Deontay Johnson is the most targeted of them.
And I know we're going to talk a little bit about Juju later. I'm only giving him a meager C grade in this. Deontay has cleared the injury report, has the most targets per game with 6.5.
Yes.
So he's worth a C start here.
No.
He's worth a C start here. And James Washington is even worth a dart throw in this matchup, but he's touchdown dependent. I'm still worried about the re-injury for Deontay.
He's not even on the injury report.
Okay, fine.
Guys, stop fighting.
Mom and Dad are fighting.
Eric Ebron, he gets a C grade. The Titans have allowed 4 different teams to record a tight end touchdown in 5 games. So Eric Ebron has an 80% chance at a score here. On the Titans side, Derrick Henry gets an A, but it's more like an A subordinate.
That's the anti-aardvark?
It's like an A if we did minuses on this show,
you know. Don't do that.
You know Henry's stats, but the Steelers have been awesome against the run, only 3.2 yards per carry and 55 yards per game to the position. But Miles Sanders, he's the silver lining, broke a big run against them and scored twice, so let's hope that he can return those A-grade numbers. Ryan Tannehill, he's getting a C-grade. He's 3rd in the league with 2.6 touchdown passes per game.
Well, he's got 3 4 touchdown games.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
11th in the league with 274 passing yards per game, but they haven't really played any good teams. Buffalo is kind of good, but he's played Jacksonville, Minnesota, Houston, and Denver.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers lead the NFL in sacks, pressure rate, and QB hit rate, and Tannehill just lost left tackle Taylor Lewan. That's not good for Tannehill. He's only getting a C grade. The Steelers are only allowing 252 yards and just under 2 scores per game. I guess that's feasible for Tannehill, mm-hmm. but I'm not trusting it that much. A.J. Brown popped up on the injury report and missed some practice time on Thursday, but he's been an absolute stud since returning from injury 2 weeks ago, and the Steelers aren't nearly as scary against the wide receiver this year. They've allowed 178 yards and a score and a half to that position this year, so I'm giving him a B. Corey Davis does return from the COVID list, but I'm sitting him this week. If you need another wide receiver, it's Adam Humphries. He's a solid C. He's getting a lot of run from the slot. Caught all six of his targets for 64 and a score last week. And then finally, Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu Smith, baby.
Man, it looks like he's going to be back on the field after an ankle injury knocked him out last week. And he's just an absolutely manly competitor, Charch, because I heard that Jonnu Smith doesn't climb trees. He just pulls them down and walks on them. I also heard that Jonnu Smith once visited the Virgin Islands, and now they just call him the Islands.
Islands, that's a good point. Yeah, that's so, Jonnu, all right.
But the Steelers are insanely good against the tight end, allowing only four catches and 43 yards per game and just one score on the season. So he's only getting a C this week.
You'll come to regret that heresy.
It's a start.
Detroit takes on Atlanta for Matthew Stafford, an A grade. He should cash in on a secondary, allowing almost 300 yards and 2.5 touchdowns per game. All of his receivers have positive matchups, as I will outline right now, beginning with Kenny Golladay, who also gets an A grade. Atlanta getting owned by opposing wideouts. Eight different wide receivers have already managed to top 90 yards against them, and most went way above 90. Golladay most often will match up against cornerback Kendall Sheffield, who has been brutal and ranks as cornerback 120 by Pro Football Focus. It is an absolute green light special for Kenny Golladay. Also getting an A, tight end T.J. Hockenson, who there I don't think has ever had an A before in this show. He has scored in each of his last two games, and he faces a Falcons defense that's allowed the second most yards and the most touchdowns to opposing tight ends. Game on, T.J. Hockenson. Sticking with the passing game, I know it's been a disaster season for Marvin Jones, particularly the last 2 weeks with a 9-yard game and an 8-yard game. But, you know, he will most often be covered by rookie cornerback A.J. Terrell, who is allowing 90% of his passes in his coverage to be completed. He gave up 75 yards and a touchdown in his coverage last week. If you're feeling bold or you've got bye week issues, Marvin Jones, the bounce back could very well be this week. Now let's go to the running game. DeAndre Swift had the breakout game last week, leading Adrian Peterson in snaps and touches. He's already proved himself to be a good receiver, and now he's getting carries at the stripe, no less. And he has a good opportunity against a middle-of-the-pack run defense, but the worst pass, the worst defense in covering running backs as receivers. And I think DeAndre Swift is sitting out a big PPR game, and he gets a B grade. Adrian Peterson only gets the ball when the Lions are ahead. And for once, that could actually happen here. So, you know, there's certainly risk, and DeAndre Swift is going to get, it may keep getting goal line looks, but I think in a pinch and a bye week, we'll give Adrian Peterson a C grade. Let's flip over to the Atlanta side, where this is pretty easy because Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and Calvin Ridley are all obvious A's. Detroit has allowed multiple passing touchdowns to every quarterback they've faced. They're going to give up multiple touchdowns here. All of the Falcons' starting receivers have favorable matchups against their cornerback counterparts. Justin Coleman, cornerback, remains on IR. Desmond Trufant may or may not play, and even when he does play, he's been bad. So we love Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Matt Ryan this week. Sticking with the passing game, Hayden Hurst, tight end. On paper, the Lions are a difficult matchup for tight ends, as they've allowed opposing tight ends to average only two catches, 24 yards, and half a touchdown per game. But they face an extremely soft schedule of tight ends, and the two competent tight ends they face, Jimmy Graham and Robert Tonyan.
Yeah.
Tonyan.
We're going to talk about that later, too.
Scored touchdowns. He's tons of fun.
Tons of fun.
That's Robert Tonyan, and he gets a C grade. Lastly, Todd Gurley. Coming off a bad game, but he's still seeing plenty of volume and faces a team allowing the third most rushing yards, 124 per game. He gets a B grade here in what should be a solid outing for Todd Gurley. When we come back, it is time for Take a Chance on Me. As you may be aware, 9 players, not normally in your starting lineup, many of whom are available off of the waiver wire. I've got 2 that are probably on the waiver wire in my set. And I know it's a tough bye week for many of you. We'll help you out with some unheralded players you can start this week when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Brian Johnson from GuillotineLeagues.com. Matt Harrison, Shock Fantasy. We encourage you to check out Matt's waiver wire work, especially on Tuesdays at Shock Fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
It is time for Take a Chance on Me. Nine players not normally in your starting lineup. We begin at the quarterback position. Brian.
I have Joe Burrow at home versus the Browns. Now, these two teams actually faced off in week two already. Burrow had 316 yards for three touchdowns in that game. The Browns have allowed multiple passing touchdowns in four of six games, at least three touchdowns in three of those four games. Burrow has topped 300 yards in four of his last five. Cleveland owns the seventh highest opponent passing play percentage. Burrow leads the NFL in pass attempts per game with 41. I love the matchups for all his receivers, even tight end Drew Sample. So Joe Burrow.
Okay. And your quarterback, Matt?
A guy who's not being treated as a top 10 quarterback, but is a top 10 quarterback in passing yards. That's Teddy Bridgewater. He's throwing for 279 yards per game. His issue is he's only thrown for six touchdown passes in six games, but I think he breaks through this week as the Saints have allowed at least three touchdown passes to each of the past four quarterbacks they've faced, including a four touchdown game to Justin Herbert in the last game that they played. So I like Teddy here.
Kyle Allen quietly coming off a really good game last week, and he's a plausible dart throw against a Dallas defense giving up 29 points per game. And as bad as the Dallas defense is, you know, wobbly quarterbacks have just been okay. Jared Goff and Daniel Jones got blank. So success here is not assured for Kyle Allen. Still, four of the past five quarterbacks to face Dallas have thrown multiple touchdowns, and Terry McLaurin alone should provide a safe floor for Kyle Allen. Brian, let's go to the running back position.
Now, Charge, I want you to think back to week one, and how happy were you at the exact moment Zach Moss caught a touchdown pass?
I was very excited right then. John Smith was rolling, and Zach Moss had just scored. It all seemed good for a moment.
Well, let's run it back, because the Bills and Jets are meeting again, this time in New Jersey. As I said, Zach Moss did catch a touchdown, proved relevance in that game, and I'm basically going to will a good game from Zach Moss here. My last two running backs and Taycom have scored two touchdowns, so two touchdowns coming for Zach Moss. Buffalo needs to instill some confidence in their rookie running back, and what better spot than against the tanking New York Jets? Devin Singletary is not the guy, averaging less than 3 yards per carry over his last three games. And after allowing just 12 total running back touchdowns in 2019, the Jets have already surrendered eight scores to the position, including five in their last four games. Zach Moss is going to finally pay off this
week. God, let's hope so. I promise. Man, just Twitter loves to ravage me for Zach Moss. Matt, who is your take a chance on me running back?
It's Latavius Murray. Alvin Kamara is my favorite back of the week, but Latavius might be the sneakiest play of the week. He's only 4,800 on DraftKings, by the way, and the Panthers are allowing 4.8 yards per carry. They've already allowed eight rushing touchdowns on the year, and in a similar matchup against a stinky Detroit defense, the Saints deployed Murray very well to the tune of 14 carries, 64 yards, and two touchdowns in that game. Speaking of yardage totals in the 60s, Murray faced the Panthers twice last year. He hit 60 yards in both games and scored in one.
Justin Jackson is my take a chance of me running back up against Jacksonville in the first non-Austin Eckler game for the Chargers. It was before last week's bye. Justin Jackson outsnapped and outtouched Josh Kelly by a 2-1 margin and simply looked much better. The last three backs to face Jacksonville, Joe Mixon, David Johnson, DeAndre Swift, gashed them for nearly 7 yards per carry. This is a great opportunity for Justin Jackson. And actually not a half bad one for Josh Kelly if you need to go a little bit deeper. Let's go to the wide receiver position. Your take a chance of me player is...
I'm going back to the Bengals-Browns game, and I got A.J. Green versus Cleveland. I mentioned these teams played in week two. A.J. had 13 targets in that game.
Yeah, turned it into like two catches or something.
Hey, three for 29.
Three. All right, there we go.
Believe it or not, that was A.J.'s first game against Cleveland since 2017. That first game. Yeah, he's been hurt a lot. But he's healthy now. And anyways, after that week two game, things basically kept getting worse for AJ until last week against the Colts when he had 8 catches, 96 yards on 11 targets. The Browns have allowed the 3rd most targets and receptions to wide receivers, who have also been very active inside the 20s against Cleveland. The Browns have yielded the most red zone targets and red zone touches to the position. I used this term last week with Swift, but AJ Green, an elite GPP play this week.
All right, Matt, your take a chance at me receiver is?
Lots of people need help at the tight end position, so I'm going to help them out this week. Darren Fells, he plays for the Houston Texans, if you're not aware. Jordan Akins looks like he's still going to miss some time with both concussion and ankle injuries. And it's worth noting a few things about Darren Fells. He's scored in each of the last 2 games since Jordan Akins got hurt. He's cleared 50 yards in both of those contests. He's averaging 14.6 yards per catch, which is very high for a tight end.
That is very high.
And 3 different tight ends have topped 50 yards against the Packers in the last 4 games. I think Darren Fells, great chance of topping 50 and scoring again.
If you need help at wide receiver, I will give you a similarly deep opportunity for you with DeMarcus Robinson against Denver.
That is deep.
Sammy Watkins is out, so DeMarcus Robinson starts. Now, last week, Robinson was on the field for 95% of the Chiefs' snaps.
Wow.
I'm interested in any carbon-based life form that's on the field 95% of the snaps and can catch passes from Patrick Mahomes. DeMarcus Robinson, carbon-based life form. Denver's got one good cornerback, Bryce Callahan. He's going to shadow Tyreek Hill. That puts Robinson up against very inexperienced cornerbacks, Michael Ojemudia and Devontae Bosby.
You made those names up.
You would think I made those names up. I may have mispronounced both of them.
I think you were playing Boggle last night with Roxy. And
DeMarcus Robinson is your ninth take a chance on me player and final one. Let's flip back over to some matchups. Brian, including Buffalo taking on the New York Jets. Now, you told us you like Zach Moss as a take a chance on me sleeper. What about Devin Singletary against the Jets?
Yeah, I don't like him as much. I'm still going to give him a C, though. I mentioned has averaged 3.3 yards per carry or less in 4 of 6 games this year. That includes the Jets game in week 1. Singletary did not show up there on the ground. He did have a season high in catches in that game with 5, and the Jets are yielding 7+ targets per game to the position, but man, Singletary scares me, even what's become a good matchup. As I said, the Jets, after allowing 12 total touchdowns all of last season, have already allowed 8, 5 in their last 4 games. But just a C for Singletary, and as you said, Charge, Zach Moss might take a chance on me running back over to the receiving game for Buffalo. Stephon Diggs gets an A, didn't score in the week 1 game, but had 8 catches for 86 yards. The Jets have only surrendered 5 wide receiver touchdowns, but Tim Patrick and DeAndre Hopkins both topped 100 yards and scored in recent weeks, so still an A for Diggs. John Brown has been ruled out.
Yes.
So get him on your bench. He had 6 catches for 70 yards and a touchdown in week 1. Cole Beasley is going to see a lot more work with Brown out. Beasley had 4 for 58 in the opener. And with Brown out, you see a few more targets coming his way. I'm not going to go the way of Gabriel Davis.
That's tempting, though, isn't it?
But yeah, if you're a daily player,
he's
rosterable at this point because John Brown remains out. Mm-hmm. Davis will be viable, but I have him on the bench here. Josh Allen, though, obviously not on the bench. 312 passing yards, 2 passing touchdowns, 57 rushing yards, and a rushing touchdown in that week 1 game. Ryan Fitzpatrick just threw for 3 touchdowns in what might be his last start ever, George.
Don't talk like that.
Last week.
Shush you.
Against the Jets. Even Brett Rippon tossed 2 scores on New York in week 4, so an easy A for Josh Allen. Over to the Jets side, not a whole lot to talk about. Jameson Crowder, going to give him a B, even though he's downgraded this week with a groin issue. You got to keep your eye on that. But he had 7 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown in the week 1 opener. Basically matchup proof when healthy. Even with Flacco under center, he's seeing double-digit targets. Hopefully Sam Darnold can make his return, though. That's still TBD. But a B for Crowder, and he's the only Jets player with a starting grade. Frank Gore, LaMichael Perrine on the bench. Mm-hmm. Every team in the NFL has run at least 10 plays at the goal line.
What do you
except
mean?
The Jets.
Oh, on the season. Except the Jets.
They've run 2.
2. Well, that makes sense.
2.
Yeah. There's no winning with the Jets. Other than Jameson Crowder. That's about it.
Bye.
Yeah. We'll take a break. When we come back, the another set of matchups, including Carolina taking on New Orleans. We'll tell you if what to do with Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders both out. What does that mean for Drew
Brees? I think you should bench him.
Yeah, but thank you.
There's a preview. Yeah,
that's right. Thank you. That's the kind of uncanny insight that you can only get from Fantasy Football Weekly.
Yep.
If you haven't yet tried a guillotine league, if you've been intrigued by the concept where every week the low-scoring team gets cut and their whole roster goes to the waiver wire for everybody else to feast on, check out guillotineleagues.com. We continue to make new leagues there almost every day. guillotineleagues.com. Back to Fantasy Football Weekly in moments. Football Weekly. We've got a bunch of matchups for you. All the notable players get letter grades, A, B, C, or bench. Now, some people have suggested that we should add in a D grade.
For desperation?
Yeah, maybe. Dart throw?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I'm not totally opposed to that idea. Let us know if you care on Twitter. You can follow me at Paul Charchian. You can follow Brian at BTXJ, and Matt Harrison is at Explosive Output on Twitter. Should we have a D grade to further delineate? My feeling has always been, if you're a D grade, really you're a bench guy.
Hashtag, I want the D.
That's open to
hashtag
a lot of interpretation.
Keep that D away from me.
Carolina takes on New Orleans, Matt. And for Carolina, you already told us you like Teddy Bridgewater. He was going to take a chance on me quarterback, so you must love his receivers as well.
Well, yeah, let's talk about Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore. I mentioned that the Saints are giving up 3 touchdown passes per game over their last 4. They're only giving up 8.8 receptions per game to the wide receiver position on the whole season. That's the lowest total in the league. But 16% of the wide receiver catches the Saints allow go for a touchdown.
Mm.
So if I'm going to give both of these players B's, because if one of every 6 catches they have is going to go for a touchdown, all we need is Robbie Anderson to get to his normal 7 catches per game. And we need a little bit of luck for DJ Moore, who averages 4.5 catches per game, but he leads the team in air yards. And he's going to be a completely forgotten DFS play, and I really like the matchup here.
Mm-hmm.
He's only 5,600 on DK, so I like him. Both B grades. The only other guy to start on the Carolina side, Mike Davis, he gets a C in this one. There's no denying that Davis has been a great fill-in for CMC, but much of his value comes from the passing game, where he ranks in the top 4 in targets, receptions per game, and receiving yards per game amongst running backs. The problem is, the Saints have the number 4 defense against the run, according to DVOA, and they're really good against pass-catching backs, allowing only 5 catches and 31 yards per game through the air. So it's just a C grade for Mike Davis. On the Saints side, Alvin Kamara is this week's fantasy aardvark. Oh, and how did the fantasy aardvark do last week, you ask?
Well, I hope pretty well. He is the fantasy aardvark, after all.
Well, Derrick Henry had 264 total yards and 2 scores last week, so you can bank on that for Kamara this week.
And also, let's have Peacock enter the room as well. But
I don't know
honestly,
if I
who didn't think Derrick Henry was sitting on a big game?
I don't think you can take a Peacock for
I don't think
now.
So.
Kamara leads all running backs in targets, receptions, and receiving yards, and is facing a Carolina squad that's allowed the most receptions in the league to opposing backs. And frankly, they're going to need him to catch passes this week with Michael Thomas out and Emmanuel Sanders out. And let's talk about them. Thomas officially out with a hamstring injury, likely from favoring his injured ankle. And Emmanuel Sanders was just put on the COVID list. I guess that means Traquan
Smith, baby.
Let's fire him up.
And a little Jared Cook, too.
Yeah, I'll give him a B grade in this one just because there's nobody else to throw to. And the Panthers are allowing a league low 132 yards per game to the wide receiver position. But it's all going to Traquan Smith or maybe Benny Fowler.
Mm.
Yikes, no.
Not ready to go there.
Jared Cook, I will give a C grade, too. He's hit the 50-yard mark or scored in 14 of his last 15 games. and he scored in both matchups with the Panthers last year. So, I had him as a C. I'll bump him up to a B with the news of Thomas and Sanders both being out. And then Drew Brees, I'm giving him a C grade. For the record, Brees is now kind of eligible for Take a Chance on Me.
I know. He's getting into that category.
He's been a middle-of-the-road thrower, and the Panthers' defense is only allowing 223 passing yards and just over one passing score per game. So that's just not enough for Drew Brees to have a great matchup here.
Brees is the king of that category now. What are you talking about?
Of what?
Being a take-a-chance-on-me quarterback.
What do you mean?
He's a take-a-chance-on-me quarterback every week. You said Brees is almost in that category of being a take a chance.
We normally don't Drew Brees into that category.
I think people still think of Drew Brees as a
stud. He's getting there, and I'm saying he's there, man.
Well, no, that's what I said. I said he's there now.
All right, can we move on?
Okay. Yeah, go to the next matchup.
All right, thank you.
How about
that's me. Dallas takes on Washington. That's much more interesting. Let's start with Zeke. Why don't we? He's got an A grade. He created an instant rapport with Andy Dalton, catching a season-best 8 receptions on a salivating 11 targets. A matchup with Washington comes at a perfect time because they are allowing 114 total yards and a touchdown per game to opposing running backs. So fully expect Zeke to get plenty of work here. Then let's go to the passing game, beginning with Andy Dalton. He was pretty bad last week, but unlike last week, there's no chance Washington puts him in an early deficit and forces the game script to be obviously passing. I still worry about the Cowboys' makeshift offensive line against the 4 first-rounders that Washington's got on their defensive front 4. Still, each of his receivers for Andy Dalton has got a strongly positive matchup against their cornerback counterparts, and we'll talk about them in just a moment here. So it's a C grade on Andy Dalton. CeeDee Lamb. A grade. He had 11 targets in Dalton's first start. 11. The best place to attack Washington is from the slot. That's where CeeDee Lamb plays. He will face woeful cornerback Jimmy Moreland, more like Jimmy Moore Yards, if you know what I'm saying. And he ranks as cornerback 96 by Pro Football Focus, and he's allowing 11 yards per reception. I like CeeDee Lamb a lot in this game. Amari Cooper gets a B grade. He was also heavily used by Dalton last week. And Washington has been good against outside wideouts, only allowing 10 receptions per game. But Cooper is one of 4 receivers with 40-plus catches and 500-plus yards so far this season. He runs predominantly from the right-hand side, where Cooper has a massive size advantage over his most common cornerback, which is going to be Ronald Darby, who is basically a track star wearing shoulder pads. Then let's go to Michael Gallup. He is on the bench. Because he runs predominantly from the left, where he'll face off against cornerback Kendall Fuller, who's having an astounding season. Get this. Just like last year, by the way. Nobody has scored on Fuller this year. Nobody scored on Fuller last year. There have been 3 completed passes in his coverage this season.
What?
For Kendall Fuller. The passer rating on balls thrown at Kendall Fuller is 9.
9 times?
9 times.
9 times.
That's staggering.
Brian, we need a Kendall Fuller shutdown nickname.
We do.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, he's ideating over there.
How about full stop?
Full stop Fuller.
Just full stop.
Full stop. Kendall, full stop.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I'm trying to go full Monty, but there's nothing there.
No, that'll
continue to work.
Last receiver option for Andy Dalton is Dalton Schultz with a good matchup. Opposing tight ends are averaging more than 5 catches and 64 yards per game against Washington with 5 total touchdowns. Schultz has at least 4 catches in 4 of the last 5 games. Safe floor with a little upside. B grade for Dalton Schultz in a difficult week for tight ends. I think he's absolutely startable. Available, by the way, in half of leagues. So if you're in a pinch of tight end, there's your guy.
How about we call him Kendall Fuller?
Is that positive or
studly.
Negative?
I don't know.
Keep working it.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
And he doesn't have knees that bend?
Kyle Allen.
Way more important.
Stop. Kyle Allen was my take a chance of me quarterback. Let's talk about his receiver. Well, and it's really just one receiver. Terry McLaurin. The Cowboys have surrendered the 2nd most touchdowns to wide receivers, 11, and have been burned relentlessly by boundary receivers. The Cowboys just got cornerback Chidobe Awuzie back from injury. Mm. Not that he's great, but he's a massive upgrade from Daryl Worley. Awuzie allowed 2 scores in his last healthy game back in week 2. He gave up 2 touchdowns. So Terry McLaurin, A grade, the first time I believe he's had an A grade this year. Staying with the passing game, quasi-passing game, J.D. McSuckett. Who has been shockingly good this year.
What did he do to your hamster? I still don't understand the disdain for J.D. McKissick.
Why do you call him McSuckett?
He's on the bench this week. I know
but you've kept giving him starting grades like over and over.
But I can't give up the nickname because I'm committed to the bit now.
Okay.
He's been a PPR workhorse, averaging 7 targets per game over the last 3 games. But you got to pick your spots with J.D. McSuckett. And unfortunately, the Cowboys are allowing the fewest receptions and the fewest receiving yards per game to opposing running backs. So this is not the spot for J.D. McSuckett.
Can't wait till you meet him one day.
Well, I know. I will issue a lavish apology to J.D. if that happens. Now, my favorite sneaky play of the day, Antonio Gibson. He's been struggling behind a horrible offensive line, but a get-right opportunity is here against the Cowboys, a team allowing 28 rushing attempts for 136 rushing yards and almost a touchdown and a half per game to opposing running backs. Those are each most or second most in the league. The return of linebacker Sean Lee strengthens the Cowboys defense, but I believe Antonio Gibson remains a solid start. You could trade for him for almost nothing, by the way, right now, and I recommend that you do that. Let's go to our next matchup, which is Cleveland taking on Cincinnati. Brian, Baker Mayfield benched in the last game. Is he startable this week against the Bengals?
Again, these teams played in week 2, the Browns and Bengals. In that game, Baker Mayfield had 219 passing yards, 2 touchdowns. That's probably his floor here, including that game. The Bengals have surrendered multiple touchdown passes in 4 of their last 5 games, including 371 yards and 3 passing touchdowns to Phillip Rivers last week. So if Rivers puts up those kind of numbers, I'm still going to start Mayfield with a C. Over to his receivers, Odell Beckham, borderline A, but I'm going to give him a B here. He had 4 catches, 74 yards, and a touchdown in the first meeting. OBJ is second in red zone targets and has seen the 3rd most end zone targets so far this season. The Bengals have allowed at least 1 wide receiver touchdown in 5 straight games, and will be without their top cornerback, William Jackson III. So actually, A, Odell Beckham. I've changed my mind. Jarvis Landry, going to give him a C. Apparently, he's been playing with a broken rib, he disclosed this week. Still going to play.
You might want to mention that.
Just 3 targets in the first meeting, but caught all of them for 46 yards. He just needs to see more volume, but he has a good matchup against slot cornerback Mackenzie Alexander, who has surrendered at least 63 yards and or a score in 2 of his last 3 games. Austin Hooper, I was going to give him a B, but he has been ruled out with an appendectomy, which brings in my pre-spec from a few weeks ago, Harrison Bryant. Now, I didn't accurately predict the appendectomy, but I said if Harrison Bryant,
though, that would, you'd have a new career.
If Harrison Bryant gets a chance to see significant target volume, he's going to go off, and this is a good matchup for it, since he has allowed at least 4 catches and 50 yards to every competent tight end they've faced, and they've also surrendered 3 touchdowns to the positions over their last 2. Bryant, bare minimum on DK, so keep that in mind. And lastly, for the Browns, we have to mention Kareem Hunt, of course. In that week 2 game, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt combined for 234 combo yards and 4 touchdowns, 3 rushing, 1 receiving. Of course, so there's no Chubb this time around. And Hunt struggled last week against the Steelers, but Pittsburgh is ranked 1st against the run by Football Outsiders, DVOA. Cincinnati is ranked 21st.
Wow.
And the Bengals have held running back scoreless in 4 straight games, but I don't care. I'm giving Kareem Hunt an A.
What about D'Ernest Johnson? Is he a dart throw in a bye week? I think
you have to be very, very, very desperate.
He would be a D Ernest D grade.
Exactly. We can go with that. Over to the Bengals side, Joe Mixon ruled out with a foot injury. That brings Gio Bernard into play, and even Travion Williams possibly. I'm going to give a C to Bernard and leave Williams on the bench, but add him in deeper leagues for sure.
This is going to be interesting because you're only giving him a C grade, and you'll explain why. But everybody's picking up and starting Giovanni Bernard, assuming that they found gold here. Explain why he's only a C grade.
I think you just found bronze. Cleveland hadn't allowed a running back to top 57 rushing yards until James Conner last week, and Bernard's never been a great runner. He's a pass catcher. He did have five catches in the week two game, so that's probably his receiving floor. Maybe I'll give him a B in PPR, a C in standard, but it's not a great matchup against the Browns. Their run defense is far superior than their pass defense so far.
Oh, the run defense has been great.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of the pass defense for Cleveland, not great. I like Tyler Boyd. Going to give him a B. He had seven catches, 72 yards, and a touchdown in the first meeting. The Browns have allowed the third most targets and receptions to wide receivers, and they have also yielded the most red zone targets and red zone touches to the position. That gives T. Higgins a B as well. Higgins had three catches on six targets in the first meeting with Cleveland, but since then he's been seeing way more looks with target totals of 9, 7, 8, and 8. Cleveland has allowed 9 wide receiver touchdowns in 6 games. It's 10 with if you count the Chase Claypool rushing touchdown. AJ Green, I love him in this matchup too. He was my take a chance on me wide receiver. And lastly, Drew Sample. I was close to giving him a starting grade. The Browns had allowed 4 tight end touchdowns through the first 4 weeks of the season, but over their last 2 games, they limited the Colts tight ends and Eric Ebron to a combined 7 catches for 42 yards. So Sample on the bench, but I got my eye on him in daily for sure. And then Joe Burrow was my take a chance on me quarterback. He can go off.
He can go off. Let me see if we have time here to get. Yeah, I think we can sneak in one more matchup. Yeah, let's go for it, Matt. Green Bay taking on Houston. Aaron Rodgers coming off of one of the worst games of his entire career. Couldn't get a softer bounce back opponent than Houston.
Right. That was the third career pick six for Aaron Rodgers.
That's insane.
Now, the career leader in pick sixes is Brett Favre, by the way, with 31.
Oh, man.
Drew Brees is the current active leader with 27. He's had 3 pick sixes in 13 years. That's crazy. And he's got a chip on his shoulder, and he gets to face a Texans team that's allowed 300 yards and multiple scores to both of the last 2 quarterbacks they've faced. A grade for Rodgers, A grade for Devontae Adams. Texans have already allowed 9 touchdowns to wide receivers in just 6 games. That even brings MVS in with a C grade, as 6 wide receivers have topped 50 yards against the Texans in just the last 3 weeks. The other receiver we got to talk about is Robert Tonyan.
Tonyan.
Because the Packers PR announced this week that his name is actually pronounced Tonyan, which rhymes with Funyan. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't feel like correcting anybody for 2 years.
Well, first of all, nobody cared about him for 2 years.
Sure.
So nobody was talking about him for 2 years.
Let's power rank mispronunciations between Brett Favre, Tyrod Taylor, and now Tonyan, most ridiculous.
Yeah, there's that, too.
So because
what
his
about
name
Chris Fuamata Maafala?
You got that really, really right there. I'm glad you did.
Yes.
Because his name now sounds like a snack food, he's now my favorite player until George Kittle announces there's actually an S on the beginning of his name, and then he's my favorite player again. So the Texans allowed Anthony Firkser to clean house against them last week after Janu went down with an injury. Firkser ended up with 8 for 113 and 1. Sounds
which would
like
have been Janu's numbers.
Which would have been Janu's numbers.
For Firk's sake.
Sounds like tons of fun for Tonyan. And then Aaron Jones, he popped up on the injury report with a calf strain and missed some practice on Friday and now is listed as a game time decision. If he goes, he's still an A grade because it's a bad Houston defense that's allowed the most rushing yards in the league and is giving up 5.9 yards per carry. If he doesn't go, I think both Jamal Williams and A.J. Dillon are startable. I'd give Williams a B grade, and I'd give Dillon a C because the matchup is just so ripe for them, and I think they'd probably split carries a little bit more with Aaron Jones out of the lineup. On the Houston side, let's start with their running back, David Johnson. He still sucks. I mentioned it last week, and I gave him a B grade last week, and he scored. This week, I'm only giving him a C because his 19 carries for 57 yards doesn't taste good. It's not what a good back does.
Well, he's not a good back.
He's like late 90s Leroy Horde and will just get you 2 to 3 yards every play. And it's a decent matchup. The Packers have allowed 2 touchdowns to a running back 4 times already this season. Deshaun Watson's getting an A grade. Since David Johnson's not good, Watson's going to have to do it for the Texans. He's had 300-plus passing yards in 3 straight and multiple scores in 4 straight. And the Packers allowed multiple scores to every quarterback they've faced except for the weird Matt Ryan game, which Julio was injured and Calvin Ridley did like a disappearing act in that game. That was weird. Will Fuller gets only a C grade. in this one. He's averaging 4.7 catches per game, but he's going to get Jair Alexander.
Yep, that one, I'm nervous about that.
The best player on the Packers' unimpressive defense. Jair helped hold every wide receiver except Adam Thielen in check. Mike Evans only managed 1-for-10 in his coverage last week.
I've got Fuller benched in a bunch of leagues.
I got C grades on Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb as well. The Packers have only allowed 5 receptions per game to slot receivers this season. And it is a Randall Cobb revenge game, so we got that going for us.
Okay.
You know, and Darren Fells was my take a chance on me tight end.
Yeah, they should be using Randall Cobb a little bit more, I think. Although they used him a bit last week, and for what they're paying him, they should anyway.
Yeah, obviously.
When we come back, 3 tough questions. You can play along, try to go 3-0. Also, if you want all of my player rankings available for free, go to guillotineleagues.com. You can also join a Guillotine League if you'd like to. Play the hottest, freshest new format. We have drafts going virtually every day. New leagues format at guillotineleagues.com. Fantasy Football Weekly, back in moments. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchian, Brian Johnson, and Matt Harrison with you. Thank you for listening. This is a game we call 3 Tough Questions. We encourage you to play along. Try to go 3-0.
Tough question number 1.
Does Antonio Brown belong on fantasy rosters in typically sized leagues, Brian?
Now, is this under the presumption he is going to the Seahawks?
No, we don't know. As of right this moment, as we are talking, we don't know.
Then the answer is no. I have nothing to back it up, really, because the guy's nuts and I can't really trust him. I was going to say, if he does go to Seattle and I roster DK Metcalf and or Tyler Lockett, that's the only reason I would add Antonio Brown to my fantasy team if he was on the Seahawks. But I can't do it. And there's no way to even research why this would be a good or bad idea. My gut tells me no. That's all I can give you. I'm sorry.
Matt.
See, I say there's no other player on the waiver wire right now who offers the upside that Antonio Brown does because, number one, he's not going to go to some scrub team if he comes back. He's going to go to a contender. So think about if he signs with Green Bay on Monday morning. How much fab would you spend on him playing with Aaron Rodgers? Or think if he signs with Baltimore or he ended up in Kyle Shanahan's offense or Arizona with Kyler and Hopkins. Yeah, he's been waiting at the baggage claim for a long time, but he didn't leave the league due to lack of talent. He left due to stuff between his ears. And if he can get that cleared up, I think that he belongs on rosters, yeah.
All right, so we have a no and a yes. So for Antonio Brown to become a reliable fantasy producer, here is what needs to happen. Number one, he has to get signed, and hopefully to a team that doesn't stink. To your point, Matt believes it's automatic that he'll go to a contender. I don't. He needs to be in immediate football shape. We have no idea if he's keeping himself in football shape, ready to hit the ground running. We don't know. He needs to learn a new offensive scheme, routes, syntax, rhythm with the quarterback. He's got to learn all that. Then Antonio Brown has to vault over 3 or 4 depth receivers to become a starter. Then he has to get enough snaps and enough targets to reliably fill box scores so that you feel like you can put him in into your lineup. Then he needs to not burn bridges with coaches, teammates, and front office personnel. Then he needs to not get resuspended by the league over the ongoing investigation into Antonio Brown's sexual assault allegations that have been levied against him and is still an ongoing NFL investigation. Any one of those goes sideways and he can't make an impact for your fantasy team. I can find somebody on the waiver wire who's better than that.
I thought you were going to say, yes, he belongs on teams after all that.
After all that. By the way, let me mention
after all that, he's really good, so take him.
His lawyer, you may have missed this about a month ago.
Yeah.
His lawyer walked away from him. The guy who he's paying to defend him tapped out. That says plenty. When your own lawyer goes, you know what? I'd really rather go try to defend an axe murderer.
Yeah. He's probably a new kind of crazy.
Antonio Brown. So I don't know that we can assume whatsoever that he's turned the corner.
Tough question number 2.
Since his big opening day game, Juju Smith-Schuster is wide receiver 80, averaging 31 yards and a quarter of a touchdown per game. Are you buying low, or are you just glad you don't have him? Matt?
His average depth of target is 4.7 yards.
Now, you could fall forward for 4.7
Almost.
Yards.
Almost. I mean, if you're really tall and you get your arms outstretched, that's not good. Chase Claypool's the best wide receiver on that roster. I don't care that it's been five games. The Steelers do this all the time. It's ridiculous. They just find wide receivers. Juju's just a slot receiver now. He's Russell Gage with fewer targets. He's Adam Humphries with fewer receptions. He's Cole Beasley with about half the yards per game. That's what Juju is. He's got a fun name, but he's just a slot guy now.
Okay. Brian.
Yeah, in redraft, I'm out. As Matt said, Juju's basically the third best option at best for Pittsburgh. But in Dynasty, I'm a little more intrigued. This is Juju's fourth year in the league. He is currently younger than the following players: Deontay Johnson, Van Jefferson, who's a rookie, Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin. These were all rookies last year, too, outside right. of Van Jefferson. Yeah. DJ Chark, Michael Gallup, and Cortland Sutton. So Juju is essentially a rookie still in terms of age. I'm not going to give up on him entirely. In Dynasty, I will buy him for pennies on the dollar, but I'm not touching him in redraft.
All right. Since the preseason, I've been saying that Juju was going to be the odd man out in this passing game. You guys know that. You've been, you heard
this. We were there, yeah.
But even so, at this point, he's so incredibly cheap. And that's really the big part of this is we're buying low. Philosophically, I like to buy low on good players, particularly when there isn't something wrong with that player or wrong with the offense. And I think he's good. I don't think Juju's great. He's not great. Mm-mm. There was a time when people thought he was great. Like, for example, August, when he was going off the board as wide receiver 12 and people thought he was great. Steelers are past their bye and their schedule is predominantly favorable other than the two games with Baltimore that are left. Now, defenses are going to have to reckon with Chase Claypool, right? This is the scenario where Juju thrived 2 years ago, where defenses had to reckon with Antonio Brown, and that left Juju open across the middle of the field. I think this could be the role back that would favor him that same way. Listen to the slot cornerbacks he's going to face for the rest of the year outside, again, Baltimore's excellent slot cornerback.
You're going to make up all these names.
Christian Fulton, Jordan Lewis, Mackenzie Alexander, Trey Herndon, Jimmy Moreland, Cameron Lewis, Kenny Moore, and Kevin Johnson. Those are all winnable matchups. For the price that you have to pay to get Juju Smith-Schuster at this point from a frustrated and probably like 1 in 5 owner, we're buying Juju Smith-Schuster.
Tough question number three.
Last week, Lions running back DeAndre Swift posted his first ever big game. Going forward, is DeAndre Swift an RB1, an RB2, a flex, or a bench player? Brian?
Going the rest of the way, Detroit is top 12 in running back strength of schedule in terms of the easiest schedule.
Okay.
So things look good on that front, but there are a few blockers in the mix for the Lions, the Colts, the Bears, the Bucks in week 16. But the primary blocker for DeAndre Swift is obviously Adrian Peterson. Right now, the Lions' backfield is averaging 146 combo yards and 1.4 total touchdowns per game. And Swift isn't even seeing half the touches. He only saw 40% of the touches in the blow-up game against the Jaguars last week. He just needs more touches, and I do think they ramp up over time. But Adrian Peterson is not going anywhere. He and Frank Gore are going to open a bed and breakfast for the cockroaches once the nuclear holocaust hits. So I'm just going to go with he's going to have RB2 upside, but if I'm going across the board, still just a flex for flex spot for DeAndre in his rookie year.
All right, Matt, is DeAndre Swift an RB1, RB2, flex, or bench player?
I got him as an RB2, and Brian stole a little bit of my thunder. I did have that they have the eighth easiest schedule against the run the rest of the way. And I did want to note that Tampa game in week 16, DeAndre Swift might be a guy who helps power you to a playoff run, but he's not going to be a guy that you can start against Tampa in your championship week in week 16. So I got him as an RB2 the rest of the way, but a little nervous about that week 16 glaring hole there.
RB2 is pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? All you guys, it's all bad from you two, and then you call him an RB2?
I said flex.
You said flex. Thank you.
I didn't think anything
answer,
was bad.
Correct answer is RB2.
Just that one game.
He led the team in plays last week, and when he's on the field, they use him a lot. We've learned that Adrian Peterson only gets used when the Lions have the lead. Well, how often do the Lions have the lead? Not often. We can just go with not often on that. Swift is getting work in every situation now. He's catching passes, which he's been doing all year long. He's getting goal line work as of last week, and he's getting three down duty. Now, as for this Adrian Peterson myth, back to Peterson, his last 3 weeks, he's averaged 3.4 yards per carry, 3.3 yards per carry, and last week, 2.7 yards per carry. You know, Peterson doesn't bring much to the table. This team is invested in DeAndre Swift and his success, and apparently they feel good about him. Okay, so week 16, maybe I'm benching him. Fine, he got me to the fantasy championship.
I don't know why you view that as such a negative, Charge. It was helping our loyal listeners.
The way you should have phrased it was, DeAndre Swift is going to power you to the championship game.
Oh, I didn't do it with enough gusto.
No.
Because I think that's exactly I said. Check the tape. Breanne, where's the tape?
Kansas City takes on Denver. Let's break down this matchup for a moment. First, for Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce, obvious A's for all of them. We talk about this pretty much every week. They're all very good plays. Denver is a great run defense, quietly, and a bad pass defense, which means the path of least resistance for the Chiefs runs right through Patrick Mahomes' arm. So plenty of passing coming. Kelsey's my number one ranked tight end this week. But Hill's situation's a little more interesting. He lines up in the slot more than 60% of the time, and Hill's going to face Bryce Callahan in the slot, one of the league's hottest cornerbacks, through five games. Callahan has not only held opponents scoreless, he's yet to give more than 54 yards in any game. Reed may choose to run Hill on the outside more just to avoid Callahan, which Hill obviously can do, and I think that ploy may work, and that's why Tyreek Hill remains an A grade. All right, I told you earlier, DeMarcus Robinson is my take-a-chance-on-me receiver. I think he's a great sneaky play this week. Let's go to this running back situation. It's our first game when we have to try to decipher what to do with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Le'Veon Bell, and they both get C grades. For Clyde, no team has allowed fewer fantasy points to backs than Denver. They've allowed just one score to a running back all year long. They're giving up just 3.8 yards per carry. No back has topped 52 yards against Denver since week two. You're hoping for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think he gets like 50 rushing yards, four receptions for 30 yards.
That's going to get you above 10. Yeah.
It gets you above 10. That's your C grade for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now let's go to Le'Veon Bell. This is a bye week C for Le'Veon Bell. If it were not a bye week, I think I would probably just be saying, you know what? Let's just wait a week on Le'Veon Bell. Let's see how this thing shakes out. It's a tough matchup anyway. But because it's a bye week, I think a lot of people are going to need to try to use him, and I'm going to give him a C grade. Remember last week I mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire is Pro Football Focus's lowest rated running back in pass blocking. So I think Bell's going to see some passing game plays immediately beginning this week. I already mentioned Denver was very good against the run. They're also terrific against pass-catching running backs, or at least had been before James White had a big game last week. He caught, and I'll remind you, Le'Veon Bell's really good pass catcher. For all the problems he had with New York, he caught 66 passes last year with the Jets. I think he chips in somewhere in the neighborhood of another four-ish catches, 30 yards, and if there's goal line work to be had, Le'Veon Bell's more likely to get the ball at the stripe. That doesn't take any more than 10 days of practice. We're going to give you the ball behind, you know, Eric Fisher, go score. So a chance for a touchdown for Le'Veon Bell. C grade. All right, let's go to the Denver side. Only a couple of players to talk about. Beginning with the running game, Phillip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon both getting C grades. Lindsay's coming off a 100-yard game without Gordon. But this should game, I suspect, will be roughly evenly split between the two of them. The Chiefs have allowed a pair of backs to each put up 45 rushing yards three different times this season. So I think that's probably about what you're looking at here, 50 yards for each guy. After struggling early, the Chiefs' run defense has been much better lately. They held Josh Jacobs and Devin Singletary the past 2 weeks to 3.3 yards per carry. That's it. While with the Chargers, Gordon hammered the Chiefs through the air, and the Broncos could try to replicate that. And I like Gordon a little bit better because he does catch the ball where Lindsay really doesn't catch much at all. So Gordon, I think, is the better play for PPR leagues. Both guys have a C grade. Also a C grade for Noah Fant, expected to return to this game. Drew Lock throws to his tight ends a lot, and Fant is the best playmaker he can possibly throw to. It's a tricky matchup, though. Kansas City's allowed just one tight end to top 50 yards against them. But they have allowed at least seven catches to the position on three different occasions. Fant gets the C grade here. I'm putting Jerry Jeudy on the bench. Kansas City surrendered the seventh fewest fantasy points to receivers. So even a high target share from Drew Lock isn't likely to bear a lot of fruit here for the rookie. Making matters worse is a matchup against, and Jeudy runs out of the slot a lot. That means he matches up against Tyrann Mathieu, and that is a brutal matchup. He's been fantastic, and he is usually the guy responsible for shutting down opposing slot receivers.
Did you see the weather in Denver on Sunday?
Well, we're going to get snow.
It's going to be 65 degrees on Saturday, and then it's going to be 20 and snowy.
And that's Colorado in a nutshell right there. They're a little bit slow behind us here in Minnesota with the snow that we've already got on the ground. So it'll be a snow game there. I don't think that'll affect things a lot, but you can check back on Sunday morning for any late-breaking changes in our rankings.
A little. The wind won't be too bad, though. That's what matters most.
You can get all the player rankings available for free at guillotineleagues.com. Paul Charchi and Brian Johnson, Matt Harrison, Fantasy Football Weekly, back in moments. Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Brian Johnson, and Matt Harrison with you. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul Charchian. Brian Johnson is at BTXJ, and Matt Harrison is at Explosive Output. Let's return to the matchups, beginning with Jacksonville taking on the Chargers. And Brian, for Jacksonville, James Robinson was a hot story for about the first 2 weeks of the season. He has come back to earth big time lately. Do you see a reversal here against the Chargers?
Yeah, this is the Jack at Lack game. I wonder if Jack Black will be there, considering it's in LA. James Robinson, yeah, has fallen down to earth big time, like you said. I'm just going to give him a C here. J-Rob hasn't topped 50 rushing yards in three of his last four games, but he still gets all the running back touches and averages nearly five catches per game. But again, this is not a good matchup. The Chargers have not allowed a running back rushing touchdown all year, and only Ronald Jones has topped 70 rushing yards. But back to the catches, Ronald Jones, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Mike Davis, and Alvin Kamara all posted at least six catches against the Chargers. So Robinson has a pretty safe PPR floor, but just a C for him in this one. Just a C for DJ Chark, too. Unfortunately, he could be in for a long afternoon as LA has surrendered just three touchdowns to opposing wide receivers, tied for second fewest. Chark had a nice matchup last week against Detroit, but only managed 45 scoreless yards. He did see 14 targets last week. He should get peppered again.
Yeah, how do you get 14 targets against the Lions and not turn that into a fantasy viable outcome?
Minshew was not on his game last week. The Chargers have allowed the fifth most red zone touches to wide receivers, though, so you got to keep DJ Chark in play. I've got Laviska Shenault and Keelan Cole. Fresh off his 148-yard game is my take a chance on me wide receiver last week on the bench, though. Only lead receivers have produced against the Chargers. Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, and Emmanuel Sanders, without Michael Thomas, all had 100-plus yards, and two of those three scored. I lied. Tyreek Hill had 99 yards. He didn't top 100, but close enough for me. Gardner Minshew on the bench. Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes both threw for multiple scores against Lack. Brady had five, but Joe Burrow, Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Brees combined for just two passing touchdowns against L.A., so Minshew on the bench for this one. Over at the Chargers side, Keenan Allen gets an A. Could become a run-heavy game for L.A., but there's no way you're benching Allen, who has looked great when healthy. He should be close to full health for this matchup, has a great matchup with a slot corner Trey Herndon, who has surrendered two scores already this year and owns a 124 passer rating in his coverage. So an A for Keenan Allen, B for Mike Williams. He's becoming an, if he's healthy, he's in fantasy player.
He's
a must
been
start.
Great all year.
And although the matchup with Jacksonville isn't great on paper, the Jaguars have only allowed five wide receiver touchdowns. Brandon Cooks and Kenny Galladay both topped 100 yards running from the boundaries against Jacksonville in recent weeks. So a B for Williams and an A for Hunter Henry. The Jaguars have allowed the fourth most touchdowns to opposing tight ends this season. And tight ends have put up at least 45 yards or a score on Jacksonville in every game. Jacksonville could be without versatile linebacker Miles Jack again, and Henry has seen at least seven targets in three of Justin Herbert's four starts. And lastly, speaking of Justin Herbert, I'm going to give him a B. prior to last week's ground attack by Detroit, we all thought Stafford was going to rip him up through the air. The Jaguars were allowing 284 passing yards and 2.2 passing touchdowns per game. As I just mentioned, all of Herbert's weapons have plus matchups. There is some risk here. Mm. The Jaguars are flying across country, playing a very good defense. This game script could flip, run heavy pretty quick Herbert, but I'm still going to give him a B here. I'm not done yet. Oh. Justin Jackson, sorry.
Yeah.
You're taking a chance on me running back.
Yeah, we love
because it's just the cakest matchup of all time, basically. And you got to give Josh Kelly a C because they're basically going to go 50-50 on this one. So
I think it was
60-40.
It was 66-33 last time. It might be 60.
They're gonna run the ball more in this one, one would think. So I'll still give Kelly the C.
I think Kelly does deserve a C. Matt, let's go to our next matchup. Tampa Bay taking on Las Vegas for Tom Brady. Great game last week. Got Rob Gronkowski back involved again. He's got all of his weapons back healthy. What do you think about the passing game for the Bucs?
Yeah, I gave Brady a B grade as current New England quarterback Cam Newton was the only quarterback not to clear 270 yards against the Raiders this year. And plus, the Raiders' 26th ranked passing defense, according to Football Outsiders DVOA, should be carved up by Brady in this one. However, I'm only going to give C grades to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, and it's because there's a lot of injury stuff still going on with them. Mm-hmm. Both were limited in practice all week. Evans with an ankle, Godwin with that lingering hamstring injury. Both are all pro caliber players, but you're probably going to start them besides this recommendation, but I will mention this. Robbie Anderson and Stephon Diggs each notched exactly 6 catches for 115 yards against the Raiders this year. Every other wide receiver has had a bad day against the Raiders all year.
They are an improved secondary.
Yeah, I did say I like Brady, but both of these guys should see issues with their injuries, and neither of them can kind of kick it. So the Raiders have only allowed 4 touchdowns to the wide receiver position. 2 of them have come to secondary options on the outside, like Sammy Watkins or Gabriel Davis. So maybe Tyler Johnson's your dart throw here, and he gets a back-to-back week of touchdowns.
Oh, man. The Evans and Godwin owners will be furious.
They would flip out.
They have been so frustrated.
Let's go to the tight end position. Rob Gronkowski scored last week and had 78 yards on 5 catches. Mm-hmm. The last time Rob Gronkowski scored a touchdown in the NFL was December 9th, 2018. So I looked up what happened on that date almost 2 years ago.
Oh, I am curious.
A beaver is seen in northern Italy on camera, a species that had not been seen in Italy since 1471.
That's a long time.
I looked that up at about 1 a.m. last night, and I was laughing.
It seemed like a good idea at the
laughing
time.
Laughing so hard at it. I was crying. I was like, what? A beaver in northern Italy? Great. Travis Kelce did torch this defense for 8 catches, 108, and a score. No other tight end to face the Raiders has topped 2 catches or 17 yards on the season. So Gronk just gets a C. And then Ronald Jones in the running game, he gets an A.
Yeah, love him here.
Yeah, I know that looks like Fournette might play in this one, but Jones has been really good. So Arians can't take him off the field, right?
Right.
Right?
Right.
The Raiders are allowing 5.2 yards per carry and just over a touchdown and a half per game to the running back position. They're also allowing the most running back receiving yards per game at 66. So Fournette's probably a dart throw if he goes. I think he's a desperation D start if you need one in a bye week.
Mm-hmm.
On the Raiders side, Josh Jacobs gets a C. Tampa's run defense is legit. They shut down Aaron Jones last week. They're only allowing 49 yards per game and only 2.8 yards per carry. Plus, Trent Brown tested positive for COVID this week, and the rest of the offensive line has been in quarantine. Now, we think the rest of the line is going to play, but that certainly affects Josh Jacobs, and that certainly affects Derek Carr, who I'm only giving a C. He's 5th in the league in passing yards and has multiple scores thrown in 4 straight games against some quality defensive sides in New Orleans, New England, Buffalo, and Kansas City. But Tampa's allowing just under 250 yards per game to the quarterback position, and their run defense is amongst the best in the league. So I think that he's still a starting grade because they're going to have to move the football somehow, and it's going to be Carr. And then Henry Ruggs, I'm giving him a C grade, and this is almost stupid here. Tampa's pretty good against the wide receiver position, except for downfield burners. Robbie Anderson had 9 for 109, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Jalen Guyton, who had 1 catch for 72 yards and a score. Tyron Johnson, who had one catch for 53 yards and a score. And since Henry Ruggs averages two catches per game, and they're usually like 50 yards,
yeah.
That's Henry Ruggs in a weird long bomb. Darren Waller, he gets a B, though. Waller's averaging seven receptions per game, and he's certainly Derek Carr's whoopee. The Bucs have been pretty stout against the tight end, although Jared Cook did beat them for 5 and 80 in the first week, and Noah Fant had five catches for 46. 6 for 70 and a score seems likely for Waller. That's why he gets the B.
When we come back, we will jump into the time machine for premature speculation. We will tell you three players that you will want to pick up now that the rest of your league is going to try to pick up next week, but they're already on your team. Premature speculation in our final set of matchups in our final segment of Fantasy Football Weekly when we come back. Football Weekly, Paul Charchian, Brian Johnson, and Matt Harrison with you. Thank you for listening. If you missed any part of the show and you're listening over the air, we encourage you to check out the Fantasy Football Weekly podcast, which is this same show, but in podcast form.
Mm-hmm.
Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, if you would, please. Available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. This is a segment we call Premature Speculation. We give you three players the rest of your league's going to be trying to pick up next week, but they're already on your team because you listen to this show. Brian Johnson.
All right. I'm going to have to give you guys a jet. I'm sorry, but Breshad Perryman is my premature speculation. A very slow start to the year. Basically got hurt in the middle of the second game of the season. Made his return last week, though, against the Dolphins. Saw 8 targets, caught 4 of them for 62 yards. And long story short, the Jets are going to be playing from behind by the middle of the national anthem every week. Breshad Perryman was brought in to be their top boundary receiver. Mentioned earlier in the show, Jamison Crowder nursing a groin injury right now. Hopefully Sam Darnold makes his return. So I'm going with Breshad Perryman, a guy I would rather add over Antonio Brown right now.
I bet. All right, it's come to that.
And let me just throw out Denzel Mims. Not in redraft, but he's basically the lone forgotten rookie wide receiver right now.
Yeah, let's say you're in a dynasty league.
Yeah,
I'm rooting for a dynasty keeper league.
Yes.
You know, for next year, Trevor Lawrence to Denzel Mims.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
Why not?
Trevor Lawrence
might not come out.
He's going
to
Eli himself out of that situation.
He might.
The reverse Eli out of New Jersey.
But
I hear what you're saying.
Adam Gase is going to be gone. Let's assume they brought in some form of competent coaching. And then I think that will be enough to get Trevor Lawrence to New York.
Yeah. If you got a dead dynasty team right now and spots to burn,
go get Denzel Mims.
Yep.
Right. Okay. You're a premature speculation player, Matt.
James Conner missed 6 games due to injury last year, 3 games the year before.
He's the wobbliest, injury-stricken starter in the NFL.
The year before that. He's never played in a week 7 in his career. He's never played in a week 14 either. So you better pick up Benny Snell, who, like I mentioned before, is the next guy in line. But I also do want to mention that Anthony McFarland's kind of looming here. Benny Snell's averaging 3.9 yards per carry on the season.
And 2 yards per carry since the opener.
Yeah, and he did have a great opening day game. But McFarland's averaging 4.3 over the season. So kind of a bonus. If you're in a really deep league and Anthony McFarland's out there, you might want to pick him up. But Benny Snell is definitely the handcuff you want to get or steal from somebody else who owns James Conner.
Baffling decision by the Miami Dolphins to decide to change quarterbacks after they had just thoroughly beaten 2 straight teams with Ryan Fitzpatrick and are 1 game out of a playoff spot and 1 game out of first place in their division. Apparently, they don't know what to do with that level of success and how to handle it. So they decide to bench Ryan Fitzpatrick.
You know what time it is, Church?
It's 2 a time.
No. It's 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. It's two, that is 2 o'clock. It's always 2 o'clock in Miami. Here's the funny thing. And you could say, if you're in a deep league, go pick up Tua. Fine. But here's the real angle.
Oh, no.
Everybody's dropping Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh, it's time to pick up Stewbeard.
It is. Go get Stewbeard. Everybody's dropping him now. Here's 2 different ways he can help you. Number 1, Tua's not ready for the job. They lose a couple of games with a first-year rookie quarterback. They could easily go right back to Stu Beard, and he's a top 10 fantasy quarterback. Or a team like the Dallas Cowboys says, you know what? This division's ripe for the taking. We're not getting what we wanted, Andy Dalton, and they make a trade to go get Ryan Fitzpatrick. With Ryan Fitzpatrick and the weapons in Dallas, he'd go right back to being a top 10 quarterback.
Dallas did inquire the other day about the Lions' David Blah as a backup quarterback. So they are actively shopping for a backup quarterback right now.
You know,
starter.
Miami's always looking for draft picks.
There you go.
There's your scenario. Two different ways Ryan Fitzpatrick can help you in about 2 weeks.
That's right, two weeks.
Very nice. All right, so there's three players upon which you can speculate prematurely. Let's talk about Chicago taking on the Rams. That is the Monday night game. Handful of angles here. David Montgomery failed us in a far better opportunity last week against Carolina. Jeez. The Rams gave up big games early in the season to Ezekiel Elliott and Miles Sanders, but since then, over the last four games, they've only allowed a single back to top 65 rushing yards while shutting backs altogether out of the end zone. Montgomery struggled mightily against the Rams last year when they played, putting up 31 rushing yards on 14 carries. So just a C grade on David Montgomery here. As for the passing game, only a C grade on Allen Robinson, who's great. He leads the league in targets. He's second in red zone targets, but he's going to get Jalen Ramsey for this game, who will shadow him throughout. Ramsey is allowing two catches per game.
His former teammate, by the way, he knows him well.
That's a good point. And as a team, the Rams have surrendered just three wide receiver touchdowns all year. So just the C grade on Allen Robinson, a rare C grade for a player that good. Jimmy Graham gets a C grade, and it's a little bit of a bye week C grade. The Rams are tied for the eighth most touchdowns allowed to opposing tight ends with four. And linebacker Kenny Young is graded as Pro Football Focus's second worst tight end defender. So I like that matchup. Graham's got 6 inches on Kenny Young, which bodes well for the touchdown dependent tight end. You're really, as with Jimmy Graham, you're never going to get 8 catches for 80 yards, but you're hoping you get the touchdown. It could happen here. Let's go over to the Rams side. Much more interesting, honestly. Starting with the running game, Darrell Henderson feels fairly safe. Cam Akers had one snap last week. That's it. One. So it seems like Darrell Henderson has secured the lead role and only needs to worry about Malcolm Brown siphoning off.
Man, I feel like we've played this song before.
When you feel the most safe, that's when you are the least safe.
There is no safety with the Rams, but this feels like it should be. The Bears are far easier to run upon than pass, and Sean McVay should give the running game plenty of attention here. The Bears are seeing 27 rushes per game, and they're allowing 126 total yards per game to the position. Henderson should be okay here. I've got a B grade on him. Cam Akers' time's coming, but with only one snap last week, it would be very bizarre, but not out of the realm of possibility to see him get a meaningful number of carries here. All right, let's go to the passing game. Jared Goff's on the bench. No opposing quarterback has thrown more than one touchdown against Chicago, and they've only given up 3 passing scores all year, despite the fact that they've faced Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, and Matthew Stafford, who are competent quarterbacks. His two main receivers, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, they've got difficult matchups, and let's go to them right now with just C grades for both of those guys. The Bears have allowed just one wide receiver touchdown. Woods has a difficult one-on-one matchup with elite cornerback Kyle Fuller. Fuller is allowing just 48% of the balls thrown his way to be completed and a minuscule passer rating of 60 on balls thrown into his coverage. It's a tough matchup for Robert Woods, so just the C grade. Cooper Kupp will face Buster Screen in the slot. And we've had a lot of fun at Buster Screen expense over the years, but he's going to be the story of another Jet who becomes competent as soon as he leaves New York. He was decent last year, and so far this year, nobody has scored on Buster Screen, and he's allowing just 40 yards in his coverage. The best game any slot receiver has posted against Chicago was way back in the opener when Danny Amendola had a scoreless 81-yard game from the slot against Chicago, and I guess that's your upside for Cooper Kupp. So just the C grade there. And Tyler Higbee's on the bench. Other than his week 2 explosion, Higbee's average game, 2 catches for 33 scoreless yards. Total disaster. The Bears have been somewhat vulnerable to tight ends. Three of Chicago's four passing touchdowns allowed have gone to tight ends, and four tight ends have topped 44 yards. Higbee is nothing but a desperation dart throw, and I don't recommend you use him. All right, let's go to our final matchup of this show. It's Seattle taking on Arizona in what figures to be a massive shootout. I believe the over-under on this game is 58, 57. It's the highest over-under of the week, Brian.
Yeah, it should be a point orgy, but really not a ton of names to mention on both sides here. We'll start with Seattle. Chris Carson gets an A. Arizona allowing 150-plus combo yards to opposing running backs. Carson had 140 combo yards when these teams first met last year. Only saw 9 touches in the second meeting, did total 60 yards. So he does have a good yards per touch history against Arizona, and that should continue here. He gets an A, as does DK Metcalf, who, if you're doing a dynasty startup right now, is
first player off the board,
the number, the number one receiver, probably.
Maybe,
first player. Who knows? But anyway, Metcalf, going to give him an A. He has topped 90 yards and scored at least once in 4 of 5 games. He did fail to score in one game, still had 4 catches for 106 yards. Yeah. That might have been the game he was Leon-led too. Just an unreal start.
That was the Leon-led game.
For DK, Metcalf is also second among receivers in end zone targets. Arizona has allowed 4 wide receiver touchdowns over their last 4 games. That adds up nicely. And during that same 4-game span, opposing wide receivers are averaging a hearty 18 catches and 228 yards as a whole. So that certainly puts Tyler Lockett in play with a solid B. Lockett has been quiet over the last 2 games, totaling just 6 catches for 83 scoreless yards. And it's worth noting Lockett only had 5 catches for 63 scoreless yards across the 2 meetings with Arizona last season. But he was dinged up last year. That Seahawks offense was not clicking as it is right now. And this is a great matchup. So a safe B for Lockett. And of course, an A for Russell Wilson. Sure, no opposing quarterback has thrown for more than 2 touchdowns or hit 300 passing yards against Arizona.
That doesn't matter.
That's understandable when the opposition has been Jimmy Garoppolo, Dwayne Haskins, Matt Stafford, Teddy Bridgewater, Joe Flacco, and Andy Dalton.
Man.
Jimmy G, Stafford, and Teddy, the truly competent quarterbacks in that list, all had at least 260 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. So that's easily a safe floor for Russell Wilson, even though I was shocked to see this. Over his last 4 games against Arizona, here are Russell Wilson's passing totals, touchdown passing totals, 1-1-1-0.
Wow.
He'll probably have more than all of those combined in this game. He should hopefully at least have 3. Over to the Arizona side, Kenyon Drake showing signs of life. Only a C for him in this one, though. Opponents are running the ball 35% of the time against Seattle. That's it.
That's
it's just too
easy
to throw.
Pass. Yeah.
They're funneling the opposition to the pass. Seahawks allowing the 4th fewest rushing attempts, the 3rd fewest rushing yards per game to opposing running backs. So they did lose Jadeveon Clowney, which bodes well for Kenyon Drake, but I'm not thoroughly convinced Drake is out of the woods, so just a C for him. Not a C for DeAndre Hopkins. He gets the fantasy Fonzie, the A. Hopkins is one of just 5 wide receivers to see at least 20% of his team's targets in every game. Seattle is allowing more than 21 catches, 294 yards, and 1 whole touchdown per game to opposing wide receivers.
Stop at 21 catches per game allowed to the wide receiver position.
294 yards.
It's staggering how bad
Compare
Seattle
secondary
Compare
that to the Saints,
been.
Who would give up 8.
8, yeah, right.
Calvin Ridley, Cedric Wilson, Adam Thielen each scored twice against Seattle, and if one wideout is going to accomplish that feat for Arizona, it's probably going to be Hopkins, but it could be Christian Kirk.
Kirk did it, yes, the last week.
Yeah, he even though was one of them technically a receiving touchdown.
Well, one was a rushing and one receiving.
But I think they still might have been called the forward pass. Anyway, a B for Kirk. Hasn't scored and has failed to top 4 catches or 40 yards in each of his 3 games against the Seahawks during his career, but again,
don't care.
The Seattle defense is on a downtrodden as ever. Arizona's offense is on another level right now. Kirk has scored at least once and or top 75 yards in 3 straight games. So a B for Kirk. I'm tempted to start Larry Fitzgerald in what will be his 34th game against the San Francisco 49ers.
Not the Niners, Seattle Seahawks.
I'm sorry, the Seahawks, right?
Yes.
Fitzgerald, though, and Andy Isabella, I got to put him on the bench here. Kyler Murray, though, lastly, he gets an A. Seattle allowing an astounding 377 passing yards per game, by far the worst in the league. Four of five opposing quarterbacks have scored multiple touchdowns against Seattle, who have also allowed three quarterback rushing touchdowns, and Kyler Murray kind of good at being a rushing quarterback.
Well, he's really good at being a rushing quarterback. Only one running back has more rushing touchdowns than Kyler Murray does.
Chase Claypool?
No, rushing touchdowns.
I'm just... Claypool's like running back 30 on the season right now. Two rushing touchdowns.
Actually, I rescind my premature speculation. Get Chase Claypool, the next running back on the team.
There you go.
You mentioned DK Metcalf, and you know, if you were drafting right now in a brand new league at this moment, DK Metcalf would be probably the first receiver off the board.
Well, in guillotine leagues, he's going as wide receiver 3 right now after Hopkins and Adams. But this is redraft. But yeah, Metcalf is vaulted. Yeah, he's right up there.
I think he would be my number one because his bye week is gone, and bye weeks are so pivotal with guillotine leagues.
Good point.
And then in Dynasty, first overall player taken to me would be DK Metcalf. If I were starting a brand new Dynasty league.
Not if it's super flex, though. It's a quarterback if it's super flex.
Correct. It would be
charge. It's a quarterback if it's
probably
super flex.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a quarterback if it's super flex.
The reason is for running backs come and go, right? Your dynasty league, you got to live with your dynasty league team for decades, potentially. Running backs come and go. Great receivers stay good. And when they're married to good quarterbacks, they stay good for a decade. And that's what DK Metcalf is looking at. I think he'd be the first player I would take in a redraft league. Matt.
Yeah.
On Thursday, Devonta Seaman, as we now like to call him.
Whoa.
Because of his many C grades.
C
grades too good for him. Was it 8 yard game? I think it was 8 yards.
Three carries for 8 yards. He did get nicked up in this game.
He hurt his ankle.
And that's part of it. Okay, so are we sabotage dropping Devonta Seaman?
I don't like that you don't say Seaman.
Because he's Freeman. He's not Freeman. He's Devonta Freeman.
Okay. I did give him a C grade on the Thursday night preview on the Shock Fantasy podcast. They do it FFW style.
Well, he would have got that. He would have got that short touchdown plunge.
Yeah, that's true. The thing with him is he's had 19 touches in each of the prior two games.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's healthy, that kind of workload is something that you can't quite drop, because 19 touches is really a lot. And even behind a bad line, he's not quite droppable. I don't think it's a sabotage either, because I don't know how many people are clamoring to go pick him up. But you're looking at 60 yards and a chance of a score in any game. So it's not a guy that you'd want to start. But if you get really desperate, he's going to be Devonta D-Man, I think, the rest of the year.
Devonta D-Man. Brian. Carson Wentz on Thursday night put up another really in a series. Almost every week, Carson Wentz, despite all the problems around him, offensive line in shambles, wide receivers going in and out of the lineup, constantly hurt, bunch of no-name receivers.
No tight ends.
Somehow, he just keeps cobbling together fantasy-relevant games. What are your prospects for Carson Wentz going forward?
Yeah, he turned Richard Rodgers' dick rod back into a star. For F's sake. But Wentz, like you said, nothing to work with. But you know what? Zach Ertz probably going to come back. Dallas Goedert is going to come back. DeSean Jackson, probably not going to come back. Jalen Reagor?
Jalen Reagor? No, he's coming back in mid-November.
By the way,
latest on him.
Eagles really should have drafted Justin Jefferson instead of Jalen Reagor. But anyway, that's in the past. But I am buying into Wentz. He looks great pretty good with nothing to work with around him. And the schedule is just so cake moving forward. They're in the NFC East. You got the Giants again, the Cowboys, the Browns on tap, the Seahawks, who we just mentioned. These are all in the next 4 weeks. These are like A-plus matchups. I can give a matchup a plus, can I? Not a player.
Yeah, yes, you can. Not a player.
A-plus matchup. So I am buying into Carson Wentz. He's a guy that probably should, you know, usurp some top 12 quarterbacks on a weekly basis in terms of starting him over, I don't know.
He's probably
Lamar Jackson 1 week, maybe. Yeah. Probably not Lamar Jackson, but you know what I'm getting at.
And he's in the same spot right now where he was last year, where he basically willed the Eagles into a playoff spot by just throwing the ball. He threw like unconscious last year, over 40 passing attempts in each of his last seven games. He's had over 40 passing attempts in five of seven games this year. And prior to week 11 last year, he had two starts with 40 passing attempts. He throws all the time. And by the way, five rushing touchdowns in his last six games.
Yeah, Carson Wentz.
He's a mobile guy, too.
Now, you got to plug your nose in some of the bad Carson Wentz plays, because there are a handful of plays every game where he looks brutal.
You know, a little Brett Favre
in him. Yeah. The will to win is obvious, and he is finding ways to get meaningful box scores for his fantasy owners. Carson Wentz, way underrated, and that guy wants to win, and I love it. Great job today, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you for listening. If you haven't already checked out Guillotine Leagues, we encourage you to do it at guillotineleagues.com. The concept is simple. Instead of head-to-head, instead, the low-scoring team each week gets cut, and their entire roster goes to the waiver wire, where it's total pandemonium in a bidding frenzy for those players. The last team standing wins. All you have to do is don't be last in any given week. Check it out. New leagues forming every day at guillotineleagues.com. Thank you for listening. If you haven't rated and reviewed, subscribe to the podcast, we encourage you to do that as well. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye, everybody. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.